Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
When designer Christian Dior arrived in New York City in 1947, he said, "New York gives the most wonderful idea of life today." A year later, the French sensation returned and opened his own ready-to-wear salon at 730 Fifth Avenue. Socialites and celebrities could not get enough of Dior's signature silhouette called the New Look. Here's a bit of the media coverage at the time.
"Certainly, the New Look is still very much a matter of personal choice. Here, for example, are some new evening gowns for the summer season of 1948. They're designed by Christian Dior, the originator of the New Look, though he disclaims the credit for inventing the name. These new dresses, he says, have the very latest line. Small waists, full hips, irregular hemlines, and the fullness of the skirts unevenly spread."
Now, anyone in New York can experience the glam and grandeur of Dior's legacy at a new exhibit called Christian Dior, Designer of Dreams, which takes up nearly 22,000 square feet at the Brooklyn Museum. It is spectacular, as in a spectacle with sculptures, video clips, lighting design, mirrored walls, optical illusions, an entire section called Colorama, and of course, dresses. In addition to previous incarnations of the show, this version looks at Dior's reception and relationship to America. Joining us now is Matthew Yagabowski, Senior Curator of Fashion and Material Culture. Matthew, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Allison. How are you?
I'm great. So Dior was from the Normandy area of France, raised in Paris. His family had some money. How did that affect his early career aspirations?
Well, early on, he really wanted to do something in the art. He was interested in architecture. He had had two art galleries. Most notably, the second one, he showed Salvador Dali's The Persistence of Memory, or Wet Watches. So he always had an artistic side to him, and it was just a matter of which area he was going to focus on.
How did he pivot to fashion from running an art gallery?
Well, it's a little bit of a sad, good story. In 1935, he contracted tuberculosis, and a lot of his artist friends started encouraging him to draw. And so over the next year, while he was convalescing, he started drawing hats, which is what a lot of fashion designers begin as milliners, most notably Halston. And Charles James, perhaps. And so he started drawing hats, did fashion illustration, and eventually moved on to designing dresses and was hired by Robert Piguet to be a part of the staff.
How was his work initially received in France?
Well, you know, it was radical what he was doing. Pierre Cardin talked about the fact that when Christian first showed the New Look, that there were fights on the street because a lot of women had sacrificed during World War II and were making do with short skirts and very minimal amount of fabric. And out comes Christian with dresses that have 10, 15 yards of fabric and weigh sometimes up to 6 pounds. So, you know, it was quite a drastic change. So the reception in France at the beginning, you know, I think the fashion press loved it. I think the people that were practical and were still, you know, recovering from the war were a little bit skeptical about this fashion direction.
My guest is Matthew Yagabowski. He's Senior Curator for Fashion and Material Culture at the Brooklyn Museum. We are talking about Christian Dior, Designer of Dreams, this new grand exhibition there. Okay, so this exhibit is dramatic, Matthew. There's intricate lighting, optical illusions, mirrored walls, there's video, there's sculpture. I felt underdressed yesterday for a moment walking through.
Oh, wow. Well, we do have a lot of people that get dressed in their newest Dior and vintage Dior to come to the show.
I'm sure. So what do you think is gained by this being so extra?
Well, you know, we've just had a really tough year in New York City, and I think we're all looking for moments of joy and excitement, and Brooklyn Museum kind of is doing that in a big way with Dior. Our collaboration with Dior was extraordinary. They too were very much interested in creating an exhibition that really gave New York a place to come and get excited about fashion.
There are several wow moments, and then there are smaller, more sophisticated ones. I want to talk about one of each. A smaller moment is, it's really interesting, his designs are juxtaposed with other art. There are these very structured black dresses, and they're presented with black sculptures. I think one of them is from the Brooklyn Museum's collection, Louise Nevelson's First Personage. It's a black painted wood piece. There's an Ames screen. And they're sort of interspersed or sort of surround the dresses in a way. Can you explain what went into, what was the thought process behind incorporating some other kinds of art with the dresses?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was doing a lot of reading last year of Christian Dior, including he did a great autobiography called Dior by Dior. And in it, he talked about how if he was going to choose new fabrics for a collection, he could artistically fulfill his interest just by using the color black, even though he, as he, to quote him, said, "I don't want to deprive all of the ladies of all the beautiful colors." But also he talked about the fact that for him, while fashion perhaps is an ephemeral art, he saw it as the equivalent of architecture or painting. And so I was thinking about these two things and thinking about Christian Dior in New York. He's here during the late 40s, 50s. And I was thinking about what other artists were making those same types of decisions. And we had a beautiful Ad Reinhardt painting from his series that he called The Last Paintings or The Black Paintings. We had the Louise Nevelson sculpture you just mentioned, and a beautiful folding screen by Ray Eames and Charles Eames that echoes the undulating forms that you see in Christian Dior's skirts. So for me, working at the Brooklyn Museum, it was a real moment where we could engage both Dior in New York as well as the Brooklyn Museum's collection.
One of the wow moments is called The Enchanted Garden. And if you go to our Instagram at All of It WNYC and look at the stories, I did a circular video. It's really beautiful. And I found a young journalist who wrote about it named Maka Leon. And her description is this: "Perhaps the most magical part of the exhibit is the jaw-dropping Enchanted Garden. Once you enter the garden, fashion and exhibition meld into one, creating an immersive experience unlike any other. Dresses float up to the ceiling while clouds and birds dance across the walls. The layout not only provides a beautiful backdrop for these pieces of art, but also gives every ball gown, suit, and form-fitting jacket the opportunity to be admired up close." Mm-hmm. What do you think visitors get from this experience? You get the wow, which is important, but seeing these pieces displayed in this way, what was the purpose of that big enchanted garden?
Well, first I'd say that back in Dior's days in the late 40s into the 50s, balls were very popular, both in terms of social events as well as fundraising events. And Dior often said it was important for every woman to have a beautiful ball gown in her wardrobe. And the other point I'd like to just mention is that back in the 40s and 50s, if you went to a fashion show, they would be an hour and a half long. They're not like today where a fashion show starts and stops in 10, 12 minutes. And so over the course of the hour, hour and a half, you would see looks for lunch, tea time, afternoon dresses that maybe you could translate into evening. And Dior said that about 1 hour in, you would need to bring up a surprise, or what they called the Trafalgars, which means surprise. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would be a bright red dress, and sometimes it would be a dress that had a lot of sequins and rhinestones on it. And these were the types of dresses that you wore to balls. And so in doing this room at the museum in this exhibition, we really wanted to give people that like, ah, moment of when you would see a fabulous dress coming out of on the Dior runway. Similar today, you know, how people react when they see a beautiful actress coming out in a couture Dior gown on the red carpet. So just multiply that by 140 and you get the Enchanted Garden Room.
How many dresses are in the entire exhibition, approximately?
There are over 200 couture dresses in the exhibition, plus several dozen toiles, which are the dress that you make before you make it out of the actual fabric.
We are discussing the exhibit Christian Dior, Designer of Dreams at the Brooklyn Museum. I'm speaking with Matthew Jakubowski, Senior Curator of Fashion and Material Culture. The exhibit also, there's a documentary sense to it as we get to understand the timeline of his career. It documents his rise, some of the initial reactions to his work. There's a Life magazine headline that read that you have that says, "New French designer surprised success at first showing," and it goes on to refer to him as a middle-aged ex-art dealer.
Yes.
What did he introduce to the United States that seemed so unusual, so interesting?
Oh, well, his idea was that he wanted to bring glamour back. You know, he really felt that women during World War II had, you know, a tough time with fashion, a tough time finding looks that expressed who they were. And so he wanted to create looks that he said were both beautiful, but also would make women feel happier. When he first came to New York City, which was in August 1947, he was, you know, in awe both of the landscape, the skyscrapers here. But he wrote about how he felt that New York and America was so well dressed, you know, from the millionaire's wife to the liftman's daughter, everyone looked great. And so I think he was really, but by the idea of opening Christian Dior in New York, he was really wanting to have a great conversation with fashion and America. And in doing so, of course, he changed the silhouette.
He also was picketed. There are signs of women angry about the length of the skirts. What was the issue with the length of a Dior skirt?
well, he introduced skirts that were about 12 to 14 inches above the floor. And, you know, at a time when most skirts after World War II, you know, they were just a little below the knee. And so there is a woman named Bonnie in Dallas, Texas. She was a former model, and she created the Little Below the Knee Club as a protest. And a month before, Christian Dior was to receive an award from Neiman Marcus in early September of 1947 for this new look collection. In August 1947, they held a protest, which was said to have been attended by 1,200 people, where they had women in long dresses that they referred to as your grandmother's clothes. And so they had these vintage dresses, they played vintage music, they had old cars, and they were trying to somehow say that the new look was old fashioned, but they were illustrating it with dresses from their grandmother, which didn't look anything like the new look. So I think it was a little bit maybe they didn't have all the information at the time, even though it was visualized in Life magazine. But it was also, you know, a time during World War II when women had a lot of say in their own dress. A lot of women were at work. They were buying their own wardrobes. And now it was suddenly like a big change. So people had to rethink priorities and rethink how they were going to move forward with fashion.
The show also takes us through some of his innovations in fashion. He was one of the first people to incorporate perfume at the launch of a fashion line. And then there's a really very interesting part of the exhibition. It's all interesting, but about the designers who came after him, because he died fairly young at 52 and suddenly sort of at the height of his career. And I got very excited because there's a low hum of feminism on this show, that the first female creative director is the current creative director. I think it's Maria Gracia Chiuri. And yes. People might remember that first line she did featured these gorgeous couture skirts with white T-shirts that said, "We should all be feminists." What has she done with her platform, and how has she maintained and evolved Dior's legacy?
Well, Marie Grazia has made a real change at Dior. I think that at Dior's heart, he always felt that he was doing this for women, you know, as I said earlier. But Maria Grazia is not only designing for women, she's being very practical minded and has a very strong philosophy behind her design. And it's a little bit influenced. Her daughter, Rachele Ridici, has a degree in gender studies and feminism and is an artistic advisor at Dior. And she often suggests books and articles for Maria Grazia to read. And one of them was by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, which was a TED Talk and then an essay titled, "We Should All Be Feminists." The Brooklyn Museum's own story with that is that we had, Maria Grazia had come to the Brooklyn Museum with a group from the Italian embassy and saw Judy Chicago's feminist installation, "We Should All," the dinner party. And they invited Judy to Paris, and she proposed doing an installation called The Female Divine. And they agreed to create this installation on the gardens of the Rodin Museum, and Maria Grazia presented her spring summer 20 collection in it. And so it was one more moment where Maria Grazia was clarifying how she saw women dressing in the future and her position as the artistic director at Dior.
The name of the exhibit is Christian Dior, Designer of Dreams. My guest has been Matthew Jakubowski, Senior Curator of Fashion and Material Culture. Matthew, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Allison. So great to see you. Hear you.
See you soon, I hope.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.